Did you take my advice and drink orange juice and eat soup?
Nah. Thanks for your electronic gumbo. That helped me at least feel a little better.
I'm so glad I could be of service.
It didn't do anything for my metabolism, but it's nice. It's always nice when somebody feels sorry for you. Well, Jamie, this is West Coast Project, and we're here for Mr. Robot, Episode 6, Brave Traveler.
Yes.
Jamie, give us your watch status. What episode are you on?
Episode 6.
Oh, you didn't go ahead.
No, and it was horrible, and I'm so, like, irritated with you. And if you hadn't been sick, I would be mad at you. But it's the fact that you were sick that I was patient. But I'm dying to go on to episode number 7, and I couldn't do it because I just refused to go ahead this time. I just was not going to do it.
So what's your take so at this point after episode 6 on Mr. Robot?
Okay, so I watched all of the episodes back, like episode 1 through 6. And I have a couple of things that I would like to say. One of them is that I was wrong about a bunch of stuff. Like, one of them was the DDoS attack. Like, I was remembering the wrong safe light training for that. The one that you actually talked about was right. And then there was another thing that I was wrong about, and now I can't think of what that fact is. But there was, oh, yeah, it was, well, actually, there were a few of them. One of them was the one where Elliot said, Am I Terrell's malware? That's what he actually said. The way that you took it was the way he said it. It just made more sense to me the other way, and I guess that's the way my brain took it. And then the other thing was...
So Elliot was Tyrell's malware?
Yeah. And so what I think is that if you took it that way, that basically he was saying, like, that Tyrell was going to, like, get rid of him, like how you get rid of malware.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, okay, so there was that. And then there was one other thing that I was wrong about, and I'll tell you that in a second because I can't remember exactly what it is right now. But there were a few things that I noticed and that I realized, and I was really pleased. And so remember we were talking about how that we listen back to our podcast. So I was listening to our podcast this morning and I realized something about Elliot. Remember the episode where we're talking about that funky weird code, like his radiator, like he kicked his radiator and then he went back to his computer and he looked up something about like radiant heat or something like that. And then that weird cryptic page popped up and it had like the stuff about the routers and then all that weird like symbolic text and all that in there, like the verbs and the articles and stuff.
Yeah. What did he learn from the radiator?
Okay. So here's the deal. What I think is that he was like maybe on the dark web and that he, at that moment, he got the idea like by looking up, the radiator or the radiant heat or whatever that was, he got the idea from the radiator to look up the heat thing, and that was a code. I think it was a code for creating the thing for the Raspberry Pi, that it would make the temperature go up in the building.
Oh, that's a good connection.
Yeah,
the radiator gave him the idea for the Raspberry Pi.
Right.
Oh, that's cool.
And I think he must have looked up, like, the, you know, some sort of coded way that they have of, like, putting the actual code out there so that he could program the little computer.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, Jamie, I made a couple mistakes, too.
Oh.
When you and Michelle and I were laughing about Key and Peele, uh-huh. I totally hacked that. I remembered it totally wrong.
Oh.
It wasn't Jon Snow that they were remembering. It was Khal's Drogo. Khal's Drogo, and he wasn't Big Dave Grohl. He was Big Dave Navarro.
Oh, God, it would have been so much funnier if it had been...
I don't know. I think they're interchangeable, right?
No, no, no.
Khal's Drogo, yo. Big Dave Navarro. Anyway, that was funny.
It was funnier as Big Dave Grohl.
Yeah, it's more alliterative, huh?
Well, not only that, but Dave Grohl kind of looked like if it was, you know, if Khal Drogo were like smaller and skinnier, he would look a lot like.
It's Khal's Drogo, yo. They put S's on everything. Khaleesi's. Khal's Drogo.
Oh my God, they're so funny.
Tywin Lannister. I put the link into that show notes. I don't know if you ever watched it, but you should definitely look up. Everybody, go back and watch Key and Peele. Turn this shit off and listen to that. It was really funny. All right, well, that's good to catch up and correct a couple things. So, but I was going to ask you, what's your take, not on Mr. Robot the show, on Mr. Robot the guy? Is he a phantasm? Is he a real guy? Or is he a combination of both?
Okay. So I have decided that he cannot be real. And the reason why I'm saying that today is because when the whole thing went down with like Elliot having to hack the prison, when he came back into the apartment building from taking the dog out maybe, and then he was in the stairwell and there was Mr. Robot. And, it was after talking to Angela. He was going back in, and Mr. Robot was in the stairwell, and he's, like, giving Elliot advice and saying, you know, let's go. And he's like, nah, Darlene is in there. We can't leave. And he's like, you know, fight or flight. You need to come. And, you know, he was saying, like, Shayla's going to die anyway and all this stuff. And I just thought it was a really, really weird, like, if he were real, that's what he's doing. He's just giving advice to say, let's run and let's leave, you know, Darlene behind, and, you know, and Shayla will be fine, or she'll be dead and she deserves it or something. That wouldn't have happened. He would have been trying to help Elliot in some kind of way, you know, get some sort of outside help. So I don't believe he's real anymore.
What do you think about, the connection to Elliot's using morphine and the appearances of Mr. Robot?
I never thought of that.
Like, he seems to appear more when he's more drugged up.
Ooh, I never.
And when he went kind of cold turkey, he didn't show up for a while.
Oh, wow. Huh.
I don't know if they mean to have any sort of connection between that or not, but I thought about that. What about what do you think about Vera outsmarting Elliot in this episode?
Okay, so there was one thing I wanted to say about him because, all right, so we were kind of thinking, because Elliot called him stupid, but that dude is really actually not stupid. He's really a philosopher. You know, the kind of stuff that he talks about is really kind of high level, you know, philosophy kind of stuff. It's interesting. He's crazy, but I don't think he's as stupid as Elliot thinks. I think it's just because Elliot's so smart that, you know, he thinks of this guy as being stupid. But what do I think about him, like, getting the upper hand on Elliot? Oh, God, it was awful. I mean, it was impressive, but it was really, really awful.
Well, Vera's a name Googler, Jamie. That's how we get the title of the episode, Brave Traveler.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
Elliot means, I think.
I think that's the one.
Or some sort of traveler, and Vera tweaks it to mean brave traveler.
Well, he says that his name and Elliot's name have something in common. They both are travelers, I believe. Or one is brave warrior, one's brave traveler, or something like that. And so, you know, again, he's finding this connection with Elliot. He's just so funny. He's such a freak. I can't believe the stuff that they write for this dude. Like when he said, you know, I'm not going to say this line, but I'm just like the one where he tells Elliot, you know, that he wants Elliot's power. He wants it so bad that it makes his, you know,
dick.
Yeah. Hard.
Well, let's get into the recap, Jamie. Good news. Shayla's been freed. It's margarita time at the restaurant. It's happy hour, and they're all back together.
Oh, God.
But there's something wrong, because Shayla doesn't want to eat. She's not hungry. So this is a weird scene. It made us think, kind of think, like, wow, they're back. She's sitting there with Elliot. That's got to be good, right? But some kind of hostage confirmation with Vera's gang.
Yeah, that was just, it was so weird. I mean, you know, you entered that scene with that really frightening-looking painting on the wall, which... that was really kind of nightmarish looking. I thought it was, you know, artistically really imaginative. And then, you know, you see them sitting there, and it just looks like such an... It was weird because it looked like such an unnatural setting in a completely ordinary area. Like the setting was really, really ordinary and very real, but it was the strained conversation and discomfort between Elliot and Shayla that made us, the audience, feel kind of like, what the heck is going on?
It's the first real sign that Vera has attained the upper hand. He's kind of outsmarted Elliot at this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So the price is Vera wants him to hack him out of prison, and the price is Shayla to do that. You get Shayla back, you hack me out, you get Shayla back.
Yep.
So he also attaches these thugs to Elliot, and they follow him home to watch him do this hacking. Vera is not letting anything go to chance here. And the two thugs are Isaac and TJ or JT or something. Some initial guy, right? Initials guy. And while they're at Elliot's house... Shoot, got a call coming here.
All right, that's fine. I'll look up this thing while I'm doing that.
And while they're at Elliot's house, Elliot's network catches Isaac's phone on his network, right?
Yes.
And here we got to jump around. I combined a few notes where things just seem to flow easier to recap them, but... We jump around. We jump away from that scene to Angela looking up old Terry Colby news files.
Yes.
Now, by the way, Jamie, Angela's cubicle at Allsafe is horrible. It's totally bad feng shui. Her back is to people walking behind her. I would not like that cubicle in the middle of the room with people walking around behind me all the time.
Yeah. You know what? I'll tell you something. At my job, I have one of the worst seats. It's, you know, where I work is, there are probably maybe 300 or 400 people who work in that building, and there are probably 250 desks. And so what they do is they have this, situation where people work from home a few days a week and they desk share. And I'm not one of those people. Like, I can work from home if I want to, one day a week, but my desk is my own. Like, I don't share it with anybody, but it is the worst desk ever because it's exactly like that. People, there's a row of carpet. It's a walkway that's directly behind my chair. And so, like, people just walk by me all day long, and then it's on a corner. So they walk behind me and then in front of me and then on my side, and it distracts me so much all day, every day. It's horrible. So I get that.
Well, Jamie, we feel horrible for you, but we're talking about Angela.
I was relating my story to Angela's.
Yeah, so Angela has found the lawyer of all the victims' families, and maybe they could reopen the case. And she goes and meets this lawyer, and the lawyer is this kind of cool woman. I like this lawyer. The first thing she does is pour herself a stiff drink.
Yes.
A la The Verdict, like Paul Newman in The Verdict.
Yeah, I really liked her, too. She was very real.
The lawyer wants no part of it, at first. But why do you think she called Angela back? Why do you think they make this lawyer seem like she's playing hard to get?
Okay, well, I mean, she's got a reason to, I mean, it took her 8 years to rebuild her career, and she really believes that that the company is evil. So, I mean, that having that sort of conflicting feelings about that, knowing she would really love to bring them down, but feeling powerless to do so, and that she would be punished if she did try, then, you know, you could understand why she would call her back but not want to help her.
Yeah, she's got kind of a professionalism about her. She wants to, she's obligated to do the right thing for these families, I think. Mm-hmm. She can't just shovel it back in the drawer and shut the drawer and forget about it.
Exactly.
So that means, I don't know, I like her. She's got integrity.
Yeah, she's got integrity and she's real. Like, I really liked the way that she handled the whole thing because you could tell she really wanted to help, but she was being realistic. She was being practical about it. Okay, so that guy, the other guy, not Isaac, but the other guy, his name is DJ.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to hear from him pretty soon. Mm-hmm. So back at the police station or the prison, where is Vera in prison? Is it a prison? Is it a jail? Is it a county?
No, he's in, it looks like a prison to me. But they are at the police station. Like they're, and I guess he could be in jail. But I think it's a prison because when they break him out at the end, that doesn't look like a jail yard. That looks like a prison yard.
All right. Well, Darlene's dropping flash drives left and right all around the parking lot of this place.
Okay. So let me tell you. Today, I was taking a safety course for my job, and they were talking about exactly that is one of the ways that that hackers actually get into your computer system. They actually used that today as an example. They said, you know, they'll drop flash drives, and then you'll pick it up and put it in your computer to see what it is, and then all of a sudden you have you've been phished.
Well, let me tell you, Jamie, that for my business, I use flash drives because I don't buy business cards and hand them out. People just throw them away. Uh-huh. Like threefold brochures, people throw them away. So I make a flash drive of like for my educational courses. I put samples of the courses on there and video and stuff because people won't throw a flash drive away. They'll keep it. But the problem is they're expensive and kids grab them and everybody wants them. It's brilliant to get people to pick it up and keep it. It's uh-huh. valuable, right? Because mm-hmm. even if you don't want what's on the flash drive, you can erase it and keep the flash drive.
Right.
So this scene was really brilliant that they have Darlene doing this. I think she dropped too many of them. She didn't have to drop 75 of them. She was throwing them all over the place.
That's right.
But the cop picks one up and plugs it in, and it's an iTunes gift card. That's all also pretty brilliant.
Yep.
And it finds out he's been hacked and unplugs it. It looks like it's too late, but it appears later on, I guess we figure out it's been captured by the virus protection at the jail or prison there.
Right.
But it's a brilliant idea. It's a good idea by Darlene.
Yep.
All right, so I'll jump back to Elliot at Hack Central. He needs to walk Flipper. Hack Central's his apartment. He needs to walk Flipper, but the Isaac gang doesn't want to let him go outside. And these guys they look like a comedy of errors, these guys. They're just sitting around getting high. Eventually, they do let him go out. They sneak up and catch him later, but it looks like they're just bumbleheads, right? Sitting around getting high. All right, go ahead, walk your dog. We don't care. Elliot goes out and meets Darlene. He finds out that the USB flash drives don't work. They didn't work. That the hack Darlene wrote was not strong enough to hack in. She had no time to do it, so she copied a quick code off the internet or something.
Yeah.
And then they catch him with her talking to her.
Yeah.
Right? Any thoughts on that, or can you copy a hack on the internet that's effective in 45 minutes? She said she had under an hour to do it.
Yeah. Okay. So he called her. I think he called her a script bunny, and I had never heard that term before. So let me look it up. I think what that is script kitty. Yeah, script kitty. In programming culture, a script kitty or skitty is an unskilled individual who uses scripts or programs developed by others to attack computer systems and networks and deface websites. It is generally assumed that script kiddies are juveniles who lack the ability to write sophisticated programs or exploits of their own, and that their objective is to try to impress their friends or gain credit in computer enthusiast communities.
So let me ask you, Jamie, I've had some people who like a lot of the shows I like. Mm-hmm. Tell me that this show is intentionally too difficult. Like, the writers made it too difficult. They had too much coding and too much script. It was too computer slanted. It was more computer slanted than it had to be to be the cool show that it is. It's like making it hard to follow. Did you ever think that?
No.
I kind of did a little bit.
No, I don't think that at all. In fact, I think it's really interesting, and I like the Easter eggs, because like that thing with the radiator, it took me a second watch to like go back through, and actually that would be a third, because I watched it twice, actually maybe a fourth.
You're a podcaster and you dive deep on these. The casual viewer is going to have watched this once and they're going to go, "Huh?"
Oh, okay, you know, maybe.
They're not going to get it. Yeah. They're going to need help.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could be right about that. Like, I haven't thought about it from that angle. But you know me, I get like such a thrill out of figuring out what the writers on any program that I'm involved in, that, you know, what they're trying to say. And so, you know, it could just be me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the boutique viewer that is like totally into a special project, like a show that they adore and they do a podcast on it, or they listen to a podcast on it, or several, or watch it multiple times, they can get into it. But I think it's tough for the casual viewer. You watch it once, you know, you're doing, and you go off, and you may not be sitting there either, glued to the TV, watching every scene, every word, which we kind of have to do as podcasters to capture all these and figure these plots out, that it could be difficult for, like, a viewer. Just, you got dinner cooking, you're watching it, you step up for a second and walk away. You can't do that with Mr. Robot.
Okay, so I'm completely with you on that, because I, you know, thinking about like True Detective, that was murder for me. And you have to pay attention, like really close attention to that program. And I just couldn't do it. I mean, like I tried really hard, but I couldn't. And so I get that. I understand. But I guess because I really like this show and because I have to watch it multiple times and, you know, like that, I guess, you know, that kind of makes it a little bit easier for me. But you're right. I mean, you know, thinking of it from that angle, there's a lot there that actually has to be. Number one, you have to do a little research, because when he said the thing about script kitty, I didn't know what that was. I thought it was KITTY, like script kitty, like she's, you know, this cute girl who's trying to rob scripts, like she's trying to, you know, copy scripts.
Yeah,
off
like
the
Hello Kitty.
But it's actually KIDDIE, and it just means, you know, what exactly I read. But I had never heard that term before, ever.
Yeah, and you even just now had to look it up to.
That's what I had to do.
Get the finer definition of it.
Okay, so while we're talking about unusual things or things like that we didn't pick up on or other people didn't pick up on, I wanted to talk about the fish Beta. That's like, you know, an iteration of software, you know, something's in beta, and the fish is a beta fish.
Yeah, and when you seek data or you seek information, you fish. You know, I don't know. There could have been a lot of meanings attached to that.
Yeah, you're right. So I just think that's really cool. I like that, and it didn't occur to me until we did the podcast with Michelle, and she said it was a beta fish, and then later on in the series, they said it was a beta fish.
Well, that Michelle's pretty smart.
She is smart.
She's secretly a computer genius, you know. She pretends to be like not, you know, oblivious of it, but she's really smart. All right, back at the lawyers. The lawyer's drinking more and more, and it looks like she's gotten Angela to join her in this drinking.
It's just so funny with her.
Now she's getting mad that no one else, that she called Angela back, but she's starting to realize, like, wait a minute, nobody else called you back other than me? She's actually angry about that.
Yeah, that they wouldn't care enough.
And then she reveals that Evil Corp ruined her practice back then when the original case was thrown out. The chemical waste intel was falsified. And the only way to really make this come back to life is they need an insider to spill on the truth.
That's right.
But it looks like to me Angela's has joined her in this drinking fest. Did you catch that? Did you think that? She's drinking something.
Yeah, I didn't really pay attention to it because I was looking at the lawyer drinking. But it does seem like peripherally that she was drinking, but I don't.
Well, they're each drinking out of coffee cups. The lawyer pours her whiskey in her coffee cup, and Angela's drinking out of coffee cup.
Is like old hard-boiled detective type, you know?
Yeah, like Paul Newman in The Verdict. It was really cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go back to Tyrell and Scott Knowles. And I say Scott Knowles, like that's his name, not like Key and Peele would call it Knowles. But Tyrell admires his Patek Philippe, and he's lobbying for his assistant job. What did you think about this? Was really weird that Tyrell tries to back out of not knowing what was going on between him and Sharon, and Scott just says, "Hey, did you enjoy the view? I know exactly what happened. Did you enjoy the view?" Tyrell backs out of it though, like, and Knowles is on to him while Tyrell's backing out of it.
Mm-hmm. So I mean,
Tyrell's uncharacteristically weak here.
Well, he has to be. This guy's got, he's got him like really kind of, he's head and shoulders above Tyrell. You know, he's more powerful. He's the favorite. He's got more money. He's a shoo-in for the job. He's got the job, you know? And
is this a parallel to Elliot and Vera? One who seemed to have been undermining and ready to flip and pull the rug out from the other has overcome that and has gained the upper hand in both these cases.
Huh, that's interesting. I didn't think of that.
But so Knowles tells him, there's no CTO job, so stop playing your games. And he gives him the watch. Here, pay off your house. And then pulls it back. Oh, just kidding. Get a look out of Tyrell, like the look of defeat on his face.
Right. Okay. So, but there's some things I want to say about that scene. The first thing is like how you were saying that Tyrell seemed weak. It was really interesting to me because he was completely off his footing. I mean, like when he came in and asked about the watch and the guy says, you know, it's from the Prince of, oh, does it really matter? And then Tyrell is like taken aback. Like it takes him a beat. And then his face breaks up into laughter, like it just hit him, you know, what the joke was. And he was, you know, he looked like the desperate climber trying to, you know, get in on the joke of this guy who's, you know, clearly above his head. And so that was that first moment that it was just kind of like, ugh, yeah, it made you feel uncomfortable. And then the whole thing with, you know, the bathroom and the, you know, the urination and, you know, the way he sort of put Tyrell in his place, like really aggressively. And, you know, and then after that, the thing with the watch, and he said, you know, I'm looking for that look on your face. I want to see that look that makes you realize that you're not going to be CTO. And, you know, and then that's when he offers him the watch and says, yeah, aren't you still in that quaint little two bedroom and apartment in Chelsea? And, you know, and then he says, you know, here's the watch. You could probably pay off your mortgage with it, and just makes him feel like nothing. And then he gets the look on his face. What's his name? Knowles says, that's it. That's the look.
It was totally a flip on what Tyrell did to Sharon Knowles when she opened her legs and she was like, yeah, I'm hot for you. And he's like, well, have a good night. I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. Knowles pulled the exact same thing on him. Like I got you to want this, and then defeat. I want that look of defeat, because Tyrell got that look of defeat on Sharon's face.
Mm.
All right. Well, yeah. Back at Elliot's apartment, Elliot is trying to brute force the PD, police department or jail or penitentiary, whatever the hell it is. And Angela shows up, and there's a lot of people there now. Angela shows up, Darlene's there, Isaac and DJ are there. And we're going to cut between scenes a couple times here. So Tyrell goes home and rants to his wife while she's just eating, listening to him.
Yeah.
And everything's in a foreign language. That was an interesting... That's why you can't stand up and go do something else. You got to read the subtitles.
Yeah.
But Knowles knew everything. He had the upper hand. He's relating this to his wife. And Tyrell thinks he needs to be more patient. And his wife kind of says, you need to jam your foot down on the accelerator. You don't need to be more patient. Because now we know what Sharon wants. We have the secret key to this mystery. And what she wants is to be wanted.
Right. Right. Yeah, I liked that. I liked that scene. Because, you know, you see Elliot flipping out, losing his mind. And she's just sitting there eating that pickle.
Is that what it was, a pickle?
Yeah.
Perfect pregnant lady food, huh?
Yeah, but she's eating it off of a fork, which was weird. And she's taking these giant bites out of this pickle. It was just so weird looking. I liked it.
All right, well, Elliot meets with Angela, and they talk about what E-Corp did to their parents. Angela's really still angry, and she has an idea that will change the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is too much for Elliot. He's starting to reach overload here. Too much, so much so that he tells Angela just what she wants to hear. And in fact, he tells us that that's what he's doing to get rid of her, and that's just right. To get away from her. And I could buy that. He's got what, a 24-hour deadline with Vera.
Well,
he's got thugs in his apartment, and he's got Angela introducing a whole new plot point, and Darlene's there.
Right. Well, I mean, so it's not only the fact that Angela is splitting his attention, and he says it's too much for him, but she's also in danger, because if she sticks around there and those guys decide to come downstairs, then she's a hostage too.
Right.
So,
right.
I think that's part of what Elliot, the reason why he just tells her what she wants to hear, because he's got to get back to what he's got to do, and he doesn't want her to become a part of this.
Yeah, and those were kind of the terms that they told him. Just go down there and get rid of that blondie down there.
Yep.
So on the way back up, he sees Mr. Robot on the stairs where we were kind of talking about. And he advises Mr. Robot, whoever he is, phantasm of person or whatever, advises calling the cops. Shayla's death, if that's what happened, is just a price, or her missing in action due to kidnapping, is it just a price of what she got herself into. And then they start using these terms, zero-sum game, and Vera is a zero-sum player. Like, he won't allow for any loose ends. This is the game. Everybody's got a role in it. Shayla's role is kind of preordained. And
yeah.
You can't save her if it's destined that she's not going to be saved.
Right. And he says that Shayla was dead the second she started working with Vera. And, you know, you got to kind of give that to him because, you know, that's probably the case. You know, and probably why Shayla was saying, I don't have a choice. I have to do this. I don't have a choice. But I thought it was really interesting that he said zero-sum game. And then later in this episode, Elliot says that to Isaac.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When Isaac is going to, you know, shoot him.
His advice is the best thing you can do for Shayla is allow her to become part of a memory and move into the new world we're trying to create.
Yeah, I thought that was awful. But, you know, if it's in Elliot's head, then that's his debate about fight or flight. And he said in the beginning of the episode, I, Elliot Alderson, am flight. You know?
Yeah.
So
Mr. Robot, I might have been Elliot, I can't remember, but one of them they may eventually end up being the same person, but they compare the cowardly Elliot on drugs to the strong Elliot not on drugs. That was interesting. That's why I asked you earlier if you thought you saw more of Mr. Robot when Elliot was on drugs than when he was free from drugs.
Well, I don't think so, because I was thinking about when you were saying it, and when he was like clean and clean and clean and clear, like when they went to what's that thing called Steel Mountain or something? What's it? Steel Mountain. Okay, so when they went there, you know, Mr. Robot was very heavily featured, but he was clean and clear, so I don't know.
So Elliot has a new idea now. He gets back upstairs, and he immediately wants to leave for the jail with his laptop. And when he gets there, he sees Vera, asks for more time, and while he's there talking to Vera, tells him that his phone is learning the jail network. His phone's sitting there capturing data.
Right.
Pretty smart. This is pretty tech. This kind of technology is, I think, absorbable by most of the audience. Like, okay, his phone's sitting there. It's gathering data about the network. Because we all see our phone when we go to different places. You can see different networks and stuff.
Yeah.
For us technology simpletons, it's kind of graspable.
Yeah.
And also the good idea that he's not going to just pop open Vera's cell. He's going to pop open every cell door so it can't be traced.
Yeah, that's really clever.
Yeah, pretty smart.
And Vera loves it.
And then Elliot starts to order Vera around a little bit. Like, yeah. Like, what are you going to do after your escape? And kind of reveals to him that he's hacked Isaac's phone, and now he owns all of his network. And if you come after me or Shayla after this is all over, I'll auto-send this info and delete your money from your accounts and all this automatized stuff so that you can't stop it if you don't let us go. Pretty smart by Elliot.
Yeah, it was really a good plan, but he didn't, you know. It was sort of reflective of the first scene of the series where Elliot is sitting in the coffee shop with the kiddie porn guy. And the kiddie porn guy thinks he's got Elliot in a chokehold because of he's telling him, I'll pay you. You know, I wasn't going to pay you. I wasn't going to let you blackmail me, but I'll pay you if you'll just make this go away. And Elliot tells him, I don't give a shit about money. And, you know, it's interesting how that kind of thing kind of turns around on Elliot in this episode.
That's a powerful position to have. Status to have, not to care about money, because you can walk away from a lot if you have that, if you really hold that position.
Yep.
But do you think Vera had his plan the whole time, or do you think Vera adjusted his plan based on this information that Elliot kind of had his network and?
Oh yeah, no, definitely he adjusted his plan because he looked really shocked when Elliot said that. Like, well, not really shocked, but he, for him, for Vera, he looked like. Whoa, that was something I didn't expect. That was the look on his face, in my opinion. So I think he adjusted his plan based on that.
So in the next scene, Angela goes to Colby's house to kind of appeal to him to do the right thing, and he's really rude to her and kind of shuts her out. And so back at the prison, we're jumping between scenes here pretty quickly, like they do in the show, Jamie. The prison network is WPA2, what is it?
All right, so that is a kind of, when you have the internet at your house.
First, tell me what it is, WP2A or PA2?
Oh, yeah, it's like WP2, I think. Oh, wait, hold on a minute, let me look it up. Yeah, WP2...
Yeah, WP2A.
Okay. Let's see.
I thought you would have known that. Sorry. Didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No. It's okay. I don't know it from that. It's what it is like, it's a network key. And they have, like, a bunch of different kinds of them. Like, it used to be WEP. And, like, when you get your, like, whatever, like, Comcast or whoever comes out to your house to install your internet, that's the wireless key, right? The network key. And now it's way, way, way secure, like, extremely secure. And that's the WP2A. And it's almost impossible to hack. And that's the reason why they use it, because it's like the next generation or whatever. And that's the one that's the most secure. And that's why he was saying, I can't hack it.
So I've seen WP2A and WPA2, and on Webopedia, it says, short for Wi-Fi Protected Access 2.
Yeah, because, okay, so there was W-E-P, then there was W-P-A, and then there's W-P-2-A or W-P-A-2.
Right.
Like, so that's, it's like the second generation of that one, and it's much more secure.
Yeah, sorry, just reading it. WPA2 provides government-grade security by implementing National Institute of Standards and Technology encryption algorithm and 802.1x-based authentication. Mm. Sounds like it works to me.
Yeah, it's Wi-Fi protected access.
All right, so that's how the prison is protected. It's too strong to hack. But, Jamie, the patrol car has a Bluetooth keyboard in it.
Yeah,
which that is vulnerable.
Yeah, that's
cool, like, that the writers figure this out, that this would be something. Again, another thing that would probably not only work, but it would be graspable by the audience to see, like, oh, I could see that. Like, the prison network is totally secure, but the stupid Bluetooth keyboard from whatever, you know, Best Buy, has a code that's not so secure.
Right. Yep.
And before we figure out what Darlene does to get that cop to hold on for a second, there's another scene where Isaac now is—he's suspicious. He's gonna take Elliot out for a walk, for a talk. Not suspicious. He probably already knows what he's gonna do. It's basically a one-way ride to kill him, right?
Yep.
Isaac has been cheating Fernando this whole time.
Well, he set Fernando up to be murdered in prison. That's the reason why Fernando had a crosshair on his head or his chest or whatever. When he told that to Elliot, I've got crosshairs on me, I got to get out tonight, because they were going to kill him that night. And it was Isaac who'd actually set that up, because when Vera realized that his brother had gotten him basically into this by insisting that they use this social media idiocy to run all their horrible business, then he knew at that moment. Isaac knew and Vera knew that Isaac was going to be dead. So the only thing that Isaac could do to ensure that he would have a chance of living would be to kill his brother in prison. And so he was actually the one who hired those guys or convinced those guys that they should kill Fernando while he's in jail. And the reason he was doing that was to protect his own life.
Yeah, so Elliot flips this whole zero-sum strategy on Isaac, saying that they need to free Vera, otherwise Vera's going to stay in jail and he'll be able to pull all these strings from in jail and he'll have Isaac killed.
Well, yeah, I mean, and, well, you know, what Elliot said was, you know, you are trying to play your best hand, you know, and he says, you know, the only opportunity that you have to come out of this alive is to, you know, let me break your brother out, and then you kill him.
Right. Yeah, because he's pretty safe in that jail. At least he's safe from Isaac.
Well, I mean, unless these people kill him, you know, the people that Isaac has hired or whatever, blackmailed or something, to get them to kill Fernando.
Right, but Isaac doesn't want Vera to. I guess they're both Veras, right? They're Fernando and Isaac Vera.
Yep.
They're both. But Isaac doesn't want Fernando to stay in jail because he's protected. If otherwise, he would just say, "Okay, I don't care. I'll leave him in jail. I'll have my guys kill him in jail." He wants. He believes Elliot that my best shot is to have him broken out so I can just shoot him and kill him right now.
No, that's not it. What it was is that he wanted his brother to stay in jail. He wanted him to stay in jail and be murdered. And what Elliot said, Elliot actually lied. He lied to Isaac and said, "Your brother told me that he's safe. He worked everything out and nobody's going to try to kill him. And he'll stay in jail as long as he has to. But you want him to stay there to be killed, but that's not going to happen now. So your best chance is to break him out." That's what Elliot told to that guy, to Isaac. And so then Isaac was like, he didn't believe Elliot when Elliot said that Fernando was safe now, but then he couldn't afford to take the risk. And Elliot's plan sounded, I guess, better, like a better strategy to Isaac. And that's when he said it's a zero-sum game. And then Isaac said, what makes you think that I won't just kill you anyway? And Elliot said, I don't. Like, I don't think that you won't just kill me anyway, but I'm playing my best hand.
Yeah, that water's pretty muddy, because why would Isaac believe Elliot? Why wouldn't he just leave his original plan in place, shoot Elliot right there, and allow his assassins to kill Fernando in jail?
Because just in case Elliot's right.
Yeah, but he's believing Elliot, he's wholesale believing everything he's saying.
Well, okay, so he's in a panic, right? He's about to kill somebody because he's trying to save his own life. And that person he's about to kill was the last person to talk to Fernando. And it's plausible that Fernando, being the evil genius he is, that he would work something out. And that, he might be able to avoid being murdered. And, Isaac is clearly the weaker of the two brothers, right? He's the less savvy of the two brothers, certainly, because it was his idea to do this internet thing. And so I think that he might, in that panic state and, needing to sort of quell his own fears about his brother.
So you didn't ever think that the internet thing, the social media marketing of the drugs was to get Fernando caught? Like, Isaac was smart enough to know that it was too open to everybody, and that eventually Fernando would have gotten caught?
No.
Isaac was not that smart?
Well, not only not that smart, but he was a partner in the business. Like, he, that was...
Yeah, he would have got caught, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, you have a better grasp on that than me. That was pretty muddy water to me. But they return to Darlene and DJ. Elliot convinces Isaac not to shoot him, and they go back to them. And this is where Darlene distracts the cop while Elliot needs that Bluetooth keyboard to stay within range, I guess, of his phone or whatever, his computer, his laptop.
Uh-huh.
And that hack works, and they do break open all the cell doors. And he's also silenced the alarms for 2 minutes, which is smart.
Uh-huh.
All the guys come running out. Now, Jamie, where are all the guards in this prison?
I don't know. I was thinking that maybe, they weren't really prepared for all the, they couldn't have been prepared for all of the cells to suddenly open. And then maybe, they were trying to bring order, but you can only catch so many, convicts.
Yeah, that was a little weak sauce, I thought.
Maybe.
So Vera walks up. And they have to get out of the gates, too. They have to get out of the fence. And, I mean, a prison's not like walking out of, Freedman's or whatever, Home Depot. There's a better fence than that. But they make it all the way out, and Vera greets them, and DJ immediately shoots Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
And Fernando asks Elliot to look at Isaac. And...
Yeah, he doesn't just ask him. He grabs his head and forces him to.
And that's the end of the threat, of any threat Elliot might have had to Vera, to Fernando.
That's right, because at that moment he says, you can try to burn me to the ground if you want to. You can try to delete all my money. I don't care. I'm free.
Right.
Yeah.
So this was, I had a hard time grasping this, obviously. You straightened me out. But this is why I think some people struggled with some parts of the show. And then the killer, Shayla's in the trunk. She is here. She is back with you the whole time. You can have her. She's with you the whole time. And she's been murdered in the trunk.
Yeah.
Good times, Jamie. Good times.
It was so awful, and it was so sad because Rami Malek's acting was so good in the scene because, you get used to seeing actors make the tortured or shocked face and everything, but his expressions were so good. Like, I don't know if you... I had to watch it back because, you know, the first time I saw it, it was really... I don't know why. I couldn't really capture, you know, the expressions that he was making, his face and everything. And part of it was that it was dark. But part of it was that it was surprising. Like, I couldn't have predicted the way that he would have... that he reacted. It wasn't a typical way for a character or an actor to play that kind of emotion. And I thought it was really, really cool the way they shot it, because he kept turning away from the camera. He was turning away, like, you know, at every turn. And it was just so interesting to me because it seemed like such a natural reaction. And it felt to me like that the cameras and the director were not worried about, you know, having the quote unquote the shot and his face in the shot and all that stuff that actually goes into, you know, creating a scene on a television program. It was more like what I think a real person's reaction would be, that they would turn around instead of standing still for the camera to, you know, lock in on their expressions. He turned around and he put his head down, and the way he was breathing, and, you know, and I mean, it was just amazing to me. And I didn't even realize until the second time I watched it that he was crying. It was just amazing to me. I love that scene. You know, and you know, them showing Shayla like that, it was just horrible. And, you know, and you could feel, you know, the emotion that Elliot must have, you know, been feeling, because this is his fault.
Didn't you tell me last episode on our podcast that you thought Shayla was going to be killed?
I told you that a few episodes ago. Yeah, it was like probably episode 3, I think, that I told you that. Now, the reasoning behind that, it's not like I'm a genius. It's that, you know, the things that you and I have talked about on the program and the things that kind of came up, because, you know, we talked about that therapy session where he seemed like that he was talking about something that happened in the past. And then we talked about the teardrops on the disc as he was writing out the name, you know, on the CD. I would never have guessed Shayla being killed if it hadn't been for those things that you observed and were able to share with me. So my guess of that was really because of extra information that a regular viewer would not have had.
Well, it was a good guess. It was a good call.
Thanks.
So, Jamie, next episode is View Source, episode 7. Until then, how do people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter, and I'm at WordGirly.
All right, and I'm at Scathing Tweets. And, Jamie, here's the question we ask each other every episode that we always trip up over. What was the meaning of the extension of this episode, bravetraveler.asf? ASF is...
Why do you do this to me?
I have it here. I'm not going to torture you. Advanced Systems Format, formerly Advanced Streaming Format, or Active Streaming Format, is Microsoft's proprietary digital audio and digital video container format.
Huh.
Advanced Systems Format. And next week it's FLV, and I'll give you a preview so you can look it up before we do our podcast.
Okay.
All right, Jamie, awesome talking to you again. Sorry about my being so scarce because I was feeling low this week, but it's good to get back together with you.
Yeah, good to get back together with you too, Mike, and I'm so glad you're feeling better.